Coming up in the Panel Scanners podcast, we'll get Phil's reaction to the end of The Superior Spider-Man. Johnny has some ridiculous trivia for us, and Darren wonders why everything needs to be so violent in the world of superheroes. Is he becoming a prude? Plus, all the favorites and stick-stuck picks, sayonara. It's the Panel Scanners episode 20, and it's happening now.
Check, check.
All right, go ahead and give it a jump.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Panel Scanners.
What do you think of that?
That is amazing.
Really?
I'm really very oaky. Much enjoying it, yes.
It's oaky. It is a red smoked bacon ale.
I can taste the bacon.
That's the oakiness. It's the bacon.
What do you, your honest opinion on this? Because I'm experimenting with a lot of things here.
It's definitely not bad. It's different, which isn't a bad thing at all.
You know what the problem is? This is not a spring or summer beer.
No, this would have been good in the winter.
This would be good.
Why didn't you feed this to me on Tuesday when it was snowing, man?
I'm sorry, we were right here. I'm gonna keep trying.
No, I mean it's definitely. This is just your first attempt at like a darker like stout.
No, I actually did a dry Irish stout last summer. Also, not when you should do a dry Irish stout, but that actually I really really liked. I was a little bit nervous about this.
It's not bad.
I've had a few. I hated it at first. I was like, oh, what is this? It was like, Joe, I've made a huge mistake. But the more I've drank it, you know what? I kind of like it. It's a nice sipping beer.
Your host, Johnny Caps. With me, as always, is Darren.
Oh, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. And I've got another one. This one just popped into my head. Some people will get this. I told you before that all this was over, you'll have wished I killed you. Now, be honest. Don't you?
Oh, my geek card has been shredded. I do not get that reference.
It's from the season finale of Justified. I have to bring that up. I'm going to bring that up later to kind of regain my cred, because I am going to lose street cred tonight. Right. And I'm okay with it.
Okay.
And also, my whiny sidekick fell.
Whiny? I guess I do have something
to
complain about.
See?
Why did Michael Bay give the turtles noses?
Oh, God.
What the hell, man?
What? Why? Okay, that's a topic for another time. We are talking about comic books, which is one of the biggest, best expanding genres in literature at this moment. And pop culture. I mean, look at comic book television shows are dominating the airwaves. But anyway.
They're not dominating the airwaves. No.
I would say movies maybe are dominating. You can't look anywhere without at least one comic book movie poster.
Anyways, we're moving on. We have a lot of news to cover. I'm covering the DC Universe. As we all know, DC Universe is the owner of Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, whatever. All right, coming up, we have the Justice League Canada, which has been renamed Justice League United, which number 0 hits next Wednesday. Justice League United, which is penned by Jeff Lemire, will incorporate Adam Strange, and the formerly Jeff Lemire character of Animal Man, because Jeff Lemire just ended that series and he's incorporating the Animal Man into Justice League United. Supergirl, Martian Manhunter, and a couple others. They had to call it United because Adam Strange doesn't really have a country of origin because outer space. Anyway, they're also doing a Secret Origins series which will retell the origins of all of the significant DC Universe characters. They're also starting, now wait for it because this is epic, they are starting a Star Spangled War Stories. Because G.I. Combat, Blackhawks, Men of War, Team 7, all of their other canceled G.I. War Story comic books did so amazingly well for the 6 issues that they ran. But there is a catch. In this comic book will feature G.I. Zombie, who fights war after war for his nation. This will be penned by the team of Justin Gray and Jimmy Palmiotti, who have been kicking butt on All-Star Western. Harley Quinn gets a one-shot with Harley Quinn Invades San Diego Comic-Con in July, validating my theory that DC is trying to make Harley Quinn into their Deadpool. Forever Evil number 7, people who read DC Comics will know that that's the big universe-bending series that's going on right now. But number 7, which is the final issue, has been pushed back to May from March 26th, along with Justice League of America, Nightwing, Suicide Squad's final issue, also Nightwing's final, and Nightwing is ending with number 30, which will be in July, which will be in May, I apologize, and Suicide Squad, which is also ending. Teen Titans, which has ended, is being rebooted as the new Teen Titans. And Suicide Squad is rebooted as new Suicide Squad.
That's Marvel-y.
Yeah. Yes. The Hooded Prisoner has been identified. The Hooded Prisoner that has been the big secret in the Forever Evil storyline.
Diamond Dallas Page.
Close. Alexander Luthor.
That is very close.
Yes. Who actually is Shazam backwards, because he's from another universe, he's from the reverse universe. So if you say Shazam backwards, you're naming who Alexander Luthor is. I was not thrilled, but whatever. Also, Infinity Man and Forever People starts in July from DC Comics, and we've got the Dan Didio and Keith Griffin team. Keith Griffin has done awesome.
Is it Griffin or Giffen? I always get that confused. Isn't it Keith Giffen?
It could be Keith Giffen. I'm calling him Griffin because he looks like a big eagle-headed lion with wings.
You hear that sound? That is the sound of me not regretting dumping all of my
new 52. Yeah, wow.
Oh, it gets better. It gets better. Weekly comics are becoming a new trend at DC Comics.
Screw weeklies.
And we've got three of them from Batman Eternal, which I'm going to talk more about that later, World's End, and Earth 2, World, _S, End. These are $2.99. I will not be picking up all three of these
every week.
A weekly
that's $2.99?
Yes, yes.
What the hell are they thinking?
They are thinking we are made of money. And they are thinking that we will do pretty much anything that they ask us to do.
You know, Johnny, I think the last time we did a podcast was talking about the financial, about how DC's, from a financial standpoint, was right to make this move, and clearly they were. This might be one of those you can't blame them for trying.
Yeah.
Why not? Hey.
Well,
sorry, Johnny.
No, it's doing it. I mean, all right. The people who've read Forever Evil number 6 will know that Dick Grayson appeared to be on the brink of death. It appeared that if he did not die, the world would die. Well, apparently Dick Grayson did not die in Forever Evil, as evidenced by the Grayson ongoing, which launches in July, where he will play not a superhero, but a super spy. That everybody but Batman believes that he is dead. It actually does look pretty.
That sounds cool.
It looks pretty badass. The hunt for a new Robin comes to a close. Everybody knows Damian Wayne died a couple months ago, and that was bad. And Batman's been looking for a new Robin ever since. And there are some whatever. It comes to a close in July with the one-shot Robin Rises Omega. Alright, skipping the stuff that doesn't really matter. Grant Morrison's long-anticipated Multiversity launches in August with a 10-issue miniseries with the 2-framing and 7-U-verse jumping. I'm excited for this because I'm a huge Grant Morrison fan. And this looks like Seven Soldiers. Seven Soldiers, if you guys remember Seven Soldiers from a while ago.
We were talking about it, yeah.
Seven Soldiers had an opening. Seven Soldiers. 7 5-issue miniseries. And a closing Seven Soldiers. That's where we got the new Frankenstein that's in DC Comics right now. It was amazing. So I'm really looking forward to Multiversity. But that's it for me, so what do we got next?
Star Wars Episode 7 has begun principal photography. They say specifically it's supposed to start in May, but it looks like it's already begun. They think they revealed pieces of an AT-AT. I don't know, the more and more we approach this thing, the more and more I'm really getting excited about it. When they first announced it, I'm like, fine, whatever, there's no way it could be worse than the prequels. And then I remembered, there's no way it can be worse than the prequels. There's only one place to go, and that's up. No, I don't know. I mean, they'd really have to try hard to be as bad as episode two. I mean, you would have to plan to be bad. Now, this is an interesting one. A Playboy interview with Stan Lee asserts Lee Grandstand self-promotes and robs credit from Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko. I read the interview, and here's what Stan Lee says about the controversy, and this is quoting him. There was never a time when it was just said by Stan Lee. It was always Stan Lee and Steve Ditko or Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. I made sure their names were always as big as mine. As far as what they were paid, I had nothing to do with that. They were hired as freelance artists, and they worked as freelance artists. At some point, apparently, they felt they should be getting more money. Fine. It was up to them to talk to the publisher. It had nothing to do with me. I would have liked to have gotten more money, too. And twice, not once, I offered a job to Jack Kirby. I said to him, Jack, why don't you just work for Marvel with me? I was the art director at the time. I said, you be the art director, I'll just be the editor and head writer, and you'll have that security. He wouldn't do it. He didn't want a staff job. With him, as with Ditko, I don't see where they were unfairly treated. Jack was a great guy, and so is Steve. I'm sorry anyone feels that there is any acrimony. I love them both. Now, the article goes on to say it's worth noting that for his part, Kirby did feel mistreated. He passed away in 1994, as most of know, but his heirs have attempted to reclaim the copyright to the Marvel characters. This is not an uncommon story for the golden age of comic creators. We've heard so much about, of course, you know, the top story is always the Siegel and Shuster, who were completely robbed of the Superman. And I heard a story that when they opened the big Broadway musical of Superman and all the stars were there, and they interviewed Joe Shuster about it, and he said, oh, how it was really nice. I saw that the mayor was there. I saw the president once. I saw these stars. And they said, well, yeah, but what did you think of the show? And he goes, oh, I couldn't afford to go see the show, which kills you, right? Mm. So this is not an uncommon thing to hear in the case of Bill Finger. It's more and more we're finding out that he had maybe a lot more to do with the creation of Batman than did Bob Kane. Yeah. But it does appear as though, if you go back, that Stan Lee tried to put himself in the forefront of Marvel, and he wanted to be seen as the comic king. In the probably the past 30 years, I do, like, going back and reading some of his interviews, and I've heard interviews with him, he always seems to give credit where credit's due. Mm-hmm. No. It's not hard to believe that he probably did screw some people over back in the day, but he's one of those guys you just don't want to believe bad things about. And you know what? One of the things they said about why did no one defend Bill Finger, I heard in an interview with Neil Adams, is that Bill Finger wouldn't defend himself. And it's hard to defend someone who wouldn't defend themselves.
Now, question. With the Stan Lee and the Jack Kirby, is it kind of a Jobs Wozniak type of relationship?
I don't really know.
Stan Lee was the guy in the front taking the credit, whereas Jack Kirby was the foundation on which Stan Lee built.
It's really hard to get to the bottom of this. Because it's who Stan Lee is, we definitely, and I count myself included among this, even though I'm not necessarily a Marvel guy, I do love Marvel comics.
Everybody loves Stan Lee.
Yeah, how do you not love Stan Lee? The guy's 92 awesome. Years old. You ever see him get around? I hope I'm that agile when I'm 70. The guy's
amazing. He's
still
writing.
Yeah.
He's great.
But, this is, 45 years ago that this stuff was going down?
Yeah.
Mm. So, who knows? I just don't think, you know, it's Jack Kirby's gone. I don't know. It's an interesting interview, though. Interesting. It really is.
Well, I only buy Playboy for the articles, so maybe I'll
check that. Well, I mean, that's one of those ones where, if I had that laying around and my wife was like, what do you got this for? I'd be like, look, it's an interview with Stan Lee. She'd be like, okay, I actually believe now that you bought that for the article. I found the article online. I'm looking at it right here. Yeah. It's been all over the web. R.I.P., The Ultimate Warrior, Jim Helwig.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys... I'm a wrestling fan.
I was when I was a kid.
I don't know. I'm going to get more into this in a little bit. I don't know if you guys know the whole story behind this. This is actually kind of a big tragedy right now. He was, for anyone who followed wrestling, even if you didn't, Hulk Hogan came around and elevated wrestling into heights it had never reached before.
Right.
And then the Ultimate Warrior came to challenge him. It was the perfect match. Like, now you had, you know, the irresistible force versus the immovable objects. I believe actually that was Andre the Giant versus Hulk Hogan, but you get my point.
Yeah.
But the Ultimate Warrior was clearly on steroids, all right? when all of professional wrestling was on steroids. But one of the biggest main events of all time was Hulk Hogan versus the World Ultimate Warrior at one of the WrestleMania, I believe it's WrestleMania 6. And then there's all been all sorts of stories about how there was a falling out. And for 18 years, you know, there was a war of words between Vince McMahon, Hulk Hogan, Jake the Snake Roberts. They all were at a war of words. And the reason I love professional wrestling, it's a comic book. And there are your superheroes.
It really is.
They are. They're looking right. And most of these guys have the physiques of the superheroes you're reading about drawn in pages, okay? So, and as an artist, I would watch wrestling because it really taught me how big guys move. It was really interesting for me to watch. So anyway, 18 years go by, and then they finally mend the fences about 6 months ago, and they decide to enter the Ultimate Warrior into the Hall of Fame. And during last week's WrestleMania, they had the big ceremony where he came out and he made this big speech. And the next night on Monday Night Raw, he came out and they gave him his victory lap to the fans, and the fans went crazy. He was dead less than 12 hours later. It's really actually a sad story. I was a Hulkamaniac at the time, so I rooted against him. But, you know, you always heard those stories about, man, they just couldn't get it together. Lorenzo Semple Jr. passed away. He is one of the architects of the Batman 1960s series who brought us Batman, and you can give him direct credit for resurrecting Batman, because without that show, Batman was dead. Warner Brothers to announce their DC film series soon. So apparently we're finally going to get what we should expect from the DC film series.
I actually just read an article on that, and it was basically, how the heck is Warner Brothers going to keep up with Marvel?
I don't see why they have to. I hope they don't do that.
Don't try to put out as much.
They should go their own way.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm a fan of Superman and the Avengers, so I mean,
I'm going to get to that. I think I've made my voice clear.
Yeah.
Oh, and the Eisner Awards out. This is the Oscars for comics. Yeah. They're not as prestigious as the Scanny Awards or whatever we were calling them, but you know, it's a nice little so anyway, I'm going to read a few of them off to you, and there's some I'll give you some of the categories. But best single issue, Demeter by Becky Cloonan, Hawkeye number 11, Pizza Is My Business,
such a good
Matt Fraction,
one.
David Jaja, Love and Rockets number 6, Viewatron number 2 by Sam Sharp, and Watson and Holmes by Brandon Easton and Steve Harris. By the way, Love and Rockets by Gilbert Hernandez and Jamie Hernandez. Best Continuing Series, East of West, something I've been reading, Jonathan Hickman, Nick Dragata. Hawkeye, Matt Fraction and David Aja.
Still really good.
Nowhere Men by Eric Stevenson and Nate Bellegarde. Saga by Brian K. Vaughan and Viola Staples. Yeah. Sex Criminals by Matt Fraction and Zdarsky. So, a couple of comics that we've all been in. Best Limited Series, The Black Beetle, No Way Out by Francesco Francavilla. Colder by Paul Tobin and Juan Ferreira. 47 Ronin, something I actually really want to read, by Mike Richardson and Stan Saki.
Really good.
Trillium by Jeff Lemire. And The Wake by Scott Snyder and Sean Murphy.
Yes.
Best New Series, High Crimes, Lazarus, Rat Queens, Sex Criminals, Watson and Holmes. And now we have some categories like Best Publication for Early Readers, Best Publication for Kids, Best Publication for Teens, Best Humor Publication, Best Anthology, Best Digital Web Comic, Best Reality-Based Work, Best Graphic Album, Best Adaptation for Another Medium, Best Graphic Album Reprint, that's like, I guess, the Tony Award for Revival, Best Archival Collection, Best Archival Collection Comic Books, Best U.S. Edition of International Material, Best U.S. Edition of International Material, Jeez. Asia, Best Writer, now here's some things, Kelly Sue DeConnick, Pretty Deadly, Matt Fraction, Sex Criminals, Hawkeye, Fantastic Four.
Kelsey DeConnick does Miss Marvel too, or Captain Marvel.
Yeah, that's it. Sorry, I missed that. Captain Marvel. Jonathan Hickman, East of West, The Manhattan Project, Avengers Infinity. Scott Snyder, Batman, American Vampire, The Wake. Eric Stevenson, Nowhere Men. Brian K. Vaughan, Saga. Best Writer Artist Team, Isabella Greenberg, The Encyclopedia, or Best Writer Artist Combination, and I don't think we've heard of any of these. I mean, we need to keep this moving. Best Penciler, Inker Team, Nate Bellegarde, Nowhere Man, Nick Dragata, East of West, Sean Murphy, The Wake, Nate Powell, March, Emma Rios, Pretty Deadly, Thomas Yates, Law of the Desert Born, Let me see. Best cover artist, David Aja, Hawkeye, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Mike Del Mundo, X-Men Legacy. Sean Murphy, Jody Belair, The Wake. Emma Rios, Pretty Deadly. Chris Samnee, Daredevil, and Fiona Staples, Saga.
Yeah, I wish the X-Men Legacy cover art was inside the book.
And then they have a bunch of other best lettering, best coloring, best comics-related periodical journalism, best comic book-related work, best podcast. We won. Great. best publication design. So, I don't know. I kind of like to pay attention to these because I'm so into comics that I like to see. And I like to... It's just kind of sometimes help me make some decisions on new stuff.
Yeah.
It's just pretty cool stuff. Something we should pay attention to when they announce them in July. Bill?
Okay. Well, mine... I have very, very light news. Very Spider-Man heavy. One thing that I forgot to put on the rundown, and it's because I don't have a ton of information about it, although I know it's existing, is there's... I can't remember if it's a single issue or a short series that is delving into the Spider-Verse. So every Spider-Man that's ever appeared in any Marvel universe is overlapping for some reason. I think it could be fun. It could be a lot of fun. There are a lot of Spider-Man.
Yeah, there are
a Spider-Man's lot.
Spider-Man's like Doctor Who at this point.
Oh, it's worse. There's so many.
Oh, my God. So much worse.
So that's the first thing. The second thing is that, and it is actually referenced in the last issue of Superior Spider-Man, which I'll get back to, is that Peter David is starting his own Spider-Man 2099 book in July.
Wow.
I'm not sure how I feel about it because I don't know how I feel about Spidey 29 as a 29.9 as a character anymore. Just the slang that he uses from 2099 of like, it's just, I can't even think of anything off the top of my head. They're just terrible.
I have that. The very first one from what?
I have the full run. Oh,
yeah.
But I don't know how I feel about him. I feel like I'm going to give it a shot. It's Peter David, and I think it has potential, and it's going to overlap into the universe that I read every other book goes into. And the last thing that I just wanted to mention is that I read an article today that Netflix has secured the rights to relaunch Firefly.
Now, I'm going to ask you something. Relaunch means they're going to... There's going to be more Firefly with the same cast, not
that
reboot.
Is correct. Okay. It's a relaunch.
They're using the same cast,
as far as I know.
Is this post Serenity or pre Serenity?
I'm assuming post.
It's gotta be
but,
post.
We have a while to wait. Joss Whedon has agreed to do it, and he will be doing it after Age of Ultron.
Okay.
We have to wait until Age of Ultron is over.
This is one of those things where, although it ended too early, tragically too early for, you know, in the annals of Nerdverse. But it's that shining beacon. Like there's nothing bad. Like you're not going to find bad Firefly.
We've been waiting for this for 11 years, dude.
We'll see. Bite your lip, man. It's going to be at least another year or two.
Okay.
So just
I'm all for it.
No, it's coming.
I'm all for it.
No, it's in the pipeline.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's all I really have. But the thing that I think we should talk about next was the movie that I saw today, Captain America: Winter Soldier. Now, I know Darren has some feelings about this that we'll get into in a little bit. So I'll just start with how I felt about it. I wasn't a huge fan of the last Captain America movie. I thought there was a lot of good foundation. But I think a lot of it was because I've never really found Captain America to be one of my favorite superheroes from the Marvel Universe. That's changed a little bit in the last few years. With the AVX overlap, I started to follow Captain America a little bit more, and I've read the current run that they've been doing, and I'm starting to like him more as a character, which makes me feel like when I went into this movie, I had more expectations, and I liked it more.
Is Ed Brubaker writing that?
I don't want to say for sure, because I'm not certain.
Okay.
It's one of those things that I read, but I don't have in front of me right now. I liked a lot of the nods to the comic world in that. I liked that Zola was one of the...
Oh my god, that was so cool.
One of the villains, considering the first major arc of the current Captain America book was all about Zola and Zola's world.
Yeah.
I thought that was very, very cool.
And I thought they worked him out because, like, you can't really have...
No, they did him right. They did it right.
No, they did it absolutely right.
We would have had, like, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Kane, I think, if we got him the way that he appears in the books recently.
Yeah.
I liked that there was no hush-hush to the fact that it was Hydra. And that was one of my original issues with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which we'll talk about later. is that Hydra, I felt like there was like an undertone of Hydra existing and having something to do with the Centipede stuff. But once again, I'm a few episodes behind on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But I like that Hydra was in the forefront, and the way that it was in just overlapping everything, and everything was so intricate and cool. And there was a lot to like about the movie. I do feel like some of it was a little ridiculous, but that's to be expected. And I don't know. I always hate the whole... There's so many spoilers when we talk about the movie, but we're all good, right?
Mm-hmm.
Talk about it for the most part. Spoiler alert. The fact that, like, Nick Fury got shot, I knew he wasn't dead. That was obvious.
You can't kill Nick Fury.
Absolutely. I thought Agent 13 would play a bigger role than she did in the film as well. Just
I would have liked that.
But I understand the way that they did it. I was surprised that Black Widow played such a large role in the movie. And that was probably the one thing that I walked away from when I left, was that it didn't necessarily feel like a Captain America movie. It felt more like here are all the S.H.I.E.L.D. misfits that are kind of hanging out and doing things. I get that Steve Rogers was the forefront, but coming out of it, I don't think it was quite as Captain America-y as I was expecting, and that's my concern for upcoming Marvel movies that are in the Avengers-verse. Not like Guardians of the Galaxy, but the things that are directly connected to Avengers, I'm a lot more nervous that they're going to think that the superheroes can't stand on their own 2 feet, and they need other members of the Avengers to go at it. But all in all, I liked it. I don't think it was as good as Avengers by any stretch of the imagination, but I felt there was a lot of good foundation there. I felt leaving it was one of the better superhero movies I've seen, but it's still not Avengers.
If I could voice my opinion.
Go for it.
It definitely was not Avengers. It didn't have to be. This was an espionage, and I'm saying that this was a different genre than Avengers. Avengers was a teen movie. This was Captain America. How can you not say that it was about Captain America?
How can you say it was not a teen movie?
Captain America was the focus. Look at who the Winter Soldier was.
I get that.
How can you not say that Captain America was the focus?
Because
now, of course, that's not... Wait.
I got you. Okay.
Let me get this. I'm saying it was awesome because it was about Captain America. It was about Captain America reintegrating into the world and finding out that this is not his world anymore. This is a world that he has to get used to. He might have to kill people. And he addresses that exactly. Yeah, I know. I hear you. But this is not the 1940s Captain America.
I gotta interject.
Go
sorry.
For it.
I can't.
Please,
because you're saying that specifically he's trying to... It's focusing on him trying to reintegrate into the world, which I disagree with.
Okay.
I don't think they spend enough time with that at all. There is mention of it with the Falcon conversation at the beginning, where he was like, oh, you know, and he's like, well, that's my list, which showed that he was trying to reintegrate. But that moment, and then at the end in the hospital bed when he was listening to Marvin Gaye, those were the two bookshelf pieces that were him reintegrating. And the fact that you're saying that the fact that he wasn't killing people in the past was ridiculous, because there was a conversation that he had people saying that there were things that I had to do that made it hard to sleep at night. He had killed plenty of people in the past, so I think that is a poor argument on your part.
And there's that line, I don't like killing bad guys.
And he
I
doesn't.
Just don't like bullies. And you're right. Captain America can't like killing bad guys. And that's why he doesn't. But this is not the Captain America from the 1940s, and that's the point I'm getting to. It's that Captain America needs to find a way to function in the world, and he's doing that through Falcon, through his relationship with Falcon, through his relationship with Nick Fury, through his relationship with Black Widow, even through his relationship with Agent 13, which I agree was not featured nearly enough.
There's a Captain America 3. We'll get it.
I totally agree. I love the movie. I thought it was Avengers espionage.
And once again, I'm not saying I didn't like it, but I feel that some of your arguments are a little weak due to... Like I said, I saw it 3 hours ago, so it's very fresh in my mind. And just some of the things that you're saying, like... That,
I saw it, too, from an illegal download.
Uh-huh.
No, I did not.
The fact that you're saying that he wasn't killing bad guys, or that that's his way of finding his way into the current day. I just disagree with. I feel that he's struggling. I do feel there's a large part in there of him struggling with what S.H.I.E.L.D. was doing, but I don't think it necessarily had to do with the fact that they were killing people. I think it was the fact that he felt he wasn't being trusted as much as he had been in the past. And I think there was a large part of that movie that was about trust, more so than anything.
I'm saying that film needed more violence.
What? There's so much violence in that movie.
All right. By the way, did anyone get distracted during the action scenes going, hey?
That's Cleveland? Yeah. I was like, I work like a
fucking there. Did you see the Ohio 6 sign?
I did.
I was like, wait a minute.
They forgot to pull that down. Fail.
But it was directed by the Russo brothers. Both are Clevelanders, too. So, hey, man. Keep it. It was okay. I have no idea what they're setting up for the Avengers because I have not seen Iron Man 3. And I have not seen Thor: The Dark World, nor do I care to.
I haven't seen Thor either.
I loved it. We both know the first Thor was so bad.
I didn't see the
first
Thor.
Is their weakest. It's
I'm not going to disagree with that, but I like
it. If you're saying it's an espionage thriller, it is the most predictable espionage thriller I've ever seen. Like, I mean, it was like a connect-the-dots espionage thriller. I'll say the highlights for me, and the more and more I watch this, I didn't mind the first Captain America. I love the period piece of it, and then I thought it was really weak how, I mean, he is frozen in ice. I still am amazed by the special effects when they shrink him down.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can't tell at all. It is impressive. I have to say, of all the performances by the Avengers, I think Chris Evans is doing the best.
Oh, he's awesome.
I mean, he is an now, and I'll say Captain America is Marvel's Superman. He is the derivative of Superman, without a doubt. And I have to say, if you judge him by that, he's a hell of a lot more Superman-like than the last Superman movie. So I enjoyed his performance a lot. But I just find these movies are now an exercise in tedium. Where, especially with the Avengers, the only thing these movies seem to exist for is to build towards something else. All right? There's no... You're right. Nick Fury... I was actually in the bathroom. I had to go to the bathroom, and Maria told me, oh, Nick Fury got shot. And I'm like, he'll be back. I mean, at no point did I feel as though he was dead.
No.
There was... I mean, first of all, because they've already talked about how they're shooting scenes, and he's like, oh, yeah, he's shooting scenes. Like, he already knew he was not going to die. Yeah. So... there was no way they were pulling the wool over our eyes with that one. I would consider myself an initiated Marvel comic reader, but maybe not to the deep level as to know. I knew going in that was Bucky Barnes. I knew that was. I had read the comic, but did they really give, like, if I look at it from a standpoint and asking my wife who did not read the comic, obviously she goes, that was supposed to be the big reveal that it was Bucky Barnes. What, did we get 10 minutes of Bucky Barnes in the first movie? I'm like, well, we got a little bit more than that, but he certainly was an important factor. And they tried to give you that sappy rundown of like, oh, here's a flashback of Bucky. And it's like, even if you didn't know, boy, oh boy, did they make it obvious that was Bucky Barnes. And even if you still didn't know, when they revealed his face, people were like, are we supposed to know who that is? So, because he looks so very different.
Yeah.
Now, on to the violence thing. We're talking about a character that's Captain America. I like that he won't kill, and I love what Captain America stands for, and I really love, like I said, he represents a heck of a lot more of what Superman is supposed to be than the Superman movie did. Now, and I say I'm getting sick of the comic book violence and that they are overly violent, because... aren't kids supposed to go see these movies? Like, I couldn't take Lily to see
No. They show people bleeding.
We
out
showed
in
her,
it.
But you know what? We showed her the Avengers, and we covered two scenes. Other than that, no problems, no problems whatsoever. So, you know, in this movie, you see guys getting sucked into jet engines. You see people bleeding out. You see, you know, people getting shot left and right, getting killed for no reason. And again, I don't know what comic book movies have against buildings. Man of Steel, I hope you're listening. But it just seems to me Zack that there's Snyder. Something to me, and it's not really violence, and I'm saying I'm not trying to be like, oh, I'm a prude now, because my favorite show on television is Justified. One of the most violent shows you will see. And the quote I used earlier, as someone is, as the main character, Raylan Givens, spoiler alert for season 5 of Justified's finale, as Raylan Givens manipulates a character's sister into killing him, he then goes over on top of him and says, I told you, as the guy's dying, he goes, I told you before this is all over, you'd wished I killed you. Now be honest, don't you? I mean, things like that, you're like, damn, dude. But there doesn't seem to be, like, there is not a moment in Man of Steel, in The Amazing Spider-Man, in Iron Man, in The Avengers, I'm going to discount The Avengers, that you don't, you show this over meticulated violence that needs to be there. It could be removed and you'd have the same movie. Okay? I bring up The Avengers and I'll bring up The Dark Knight, where when violence occurred, it was an unavoidable moment. When someone died, it was more implied than it was
witnessed.
It was witnessed. Which is better. And in the case of, now here I'm bashing the Marvel movies for this. But I will say, as much as I hated The Amazing Spider-Man, as much as I hated Thor, as much as I know I'm going to hate, and I think we agree the new Spider-Man does not look too great.
I have slightly higher expectations.
As much as I hate those movies, I'm a Superman fan, and I hate Man of Steel more than any of those combined for that fact. Because I agree with what Johnny said, but I also agree with what he said. We live in a world where Captain America better never kill anyone because Superman already has. And I hate that, of what they did with that movie. Maybe Captain America, but I could, if I'm going to show Lily a movie, I could probably show her Captain America. I'm not showing her Man of Steel. Hell no. I am not going to show her. That is, first of all,
it is very graphic.
It is extremely graphic. Did you ever see it?
No, I haven't.
Please don't. Please don't. I fucking hate that movie.
Wow.
Bravo. We dropped an F-bomb. First F-bomb.
That needs to be dropped for that movie. What a travesty. Which is why we announced the DC movies going forward. Couldn't care less. All right? I could not care less. I'll be interested when they release the costume for Batman. I want to see the Batmobile. And I'm not going to sit here and say I'm not going to be in the theater when Batman and Superman is released. I mean, but I'm just so put off by all this. It's like, you know, see these big heroes in a theater. Think of us as kids. If we're like, Mommy, can we go see that? And like, no, you can't go see that. It's too violent. Like, I can't go see Superman? What are you, crazy? Yeah, I can't go see Cap. The freaking Spider-Man's right there. He's like 40 feet tall. It's going to be up next year. Tell me I can't go see it?
You're absolutely correct.
That is, to me, there's something missing. Now, there's also, you could say, though, that a lot of, like, and I look at my students, that they've kind of got their own characters now. So maybe it's like, okay, the people who are watching these are a little bit more grown up. Spider-Man and Superman, the kids don't seem to care as much.
That's what I was going to bring up. Is the comic crowd is aging.
That's the question I have for you guys.
The comic book crowd is aging, and the movies are setting to the comic book crowd.
Now, my experience with a child and with nephews, my nephews love the Avengers, and Lily loves Superman and Batman.
Well,
and she sees the Batman movies.
Damn well better believe my kids are going to be into Superman. They're going to be into comic books.
Isn't Superman supposed to be someone we look up to?
Yeah.
Isn't he supposed to, like...
He's an alien.
But think about it.
I'm just saying.
But think about it. Isn't it something we should... You know, you should see Superman go, yes. And the thing that the creators are doing with it now, oh, there needs to be a reason that people fear Superman. No. People cheer Superman. He's Hulk Hogan with Superman. That guy walks in anywhere and people are going to cheer him, okay?
All right.
I don't know. What do you think, Phil?
Oh, man, I'm torn, because it's one of those things that I am starting to feel that the movies are definitely directed more toward an older teenage to adult audience, more so than a young child audience, but I'm in the same boat as you, that if I ever were to have a child, I'm sure my kids would be super into comics and stuff, because I will be their dad. So, I don't know, it's also a product of what kids can see on TV. Because thinking of that, like, as a kid, I wouldn't be able to just turn on the TV at night and see someone get shot. Now you do. So these movies are trying to be more entertaining because they're expensive.
Okay. I'm sorry. Please finish.
So, and I think in... I see where you're coming from, where these are supposed to be, like, role models. Like, Spider-Man's supposed to be great power comes great responsibility. Superman's supposed to be the great hero that doesn't kill, and we're supposed to look up to them. But at the same time, Marvel and DC are companies and businesses that need to make money, and they don't think that they'll be able to do the same thing.
But They did on Batman.
You're saying there's no violence in Batman?
No, I'm saying Batman didn't kill.
Let me interject something here. And I want to approach it from the artistic filmmaking standpoint. Tell me how Captain America is any less entertaining if they don't show someone bleed out, if they don't show someone getting sucked into a gen engine. Yeah, you see, Captain America is actually, it's the freshest one, but it's the least of the, it's the lowest culprit of the recent movies. It actually was pretty tame compared by, I gotta tell you, again, Man of Steel was the big one last year.
See, I didn't see Man
compared
of Steel,
to Man of Steel. This was a ray of sunshine,
yeah.
Okay?
But I mean, this could have been My Little Pony compared to... yeah, you're right.
Johnny's right. That's you're a really right. good analogy.
And there
Johnny's
are
right about
a few
that.
Amounts of people laying on the ground bleeding out, people getting shot in the face, people getting shot in the head.
Yes, and that's my problem. This was one of the least culprits. Now, everyone says, well, it can't be as violent as The Dark Knight. Go back and watch The Dark Knight. It's not as violent as these movies. It really isn't. The Joker, there's the one scene with the pencil trick, right?
Yeah.
Other than that... They even went to the trouble of showing Gotham City being evacuated. They gave us that one scene that says, look, anything that happens from this point forward, innocent people aren't getting killed. The Dark Knight, there seems to be...
The pencil was not an innocent person. But
No. You're right. But I'm talking about when the Joker was basically like, look, I got you guys. I got the whole city by the short and curlies, and I'm going to take everyone down. So... And it was even like the Joker's like, fine, you want to evacuate the innocent people? Go right ahead, because this is between me and these other people. And they gave us that moment where, okay, you can watch. Now you're like, it's root for Batman, and you could root for him unhinged. You know, you didn't have to be guilty. And you know, everyone wants to point to The Dark Knight as being this dark, dark movie. It isn't. It is actually brighter than a lot of these movies that
I
are
can
out
interject.
Now. And well, let me finish my point.
Okay, go for it.
So there seems to be. If you're going to talk about superhero movies, there's two tones to go for: The Dark Knight and The Avengers. And I can't pick between the two because they're so vastly different, but they're so equally thrilling. And I think everyone's trying to go, oh, we want to be a little bit of Avengers, we want to be a little bit of The Dark Knight. And I don't think you can meet in between. So they're trying to give you the bright colors of The Avengers and what they perceive as the violence of The Dark Knight, whereas The Dark Knight wasn't all that bad.
In The Dark Knight, we got to witness not only a hero's goodness, but the goodness in humanity with that scene on the boat when the two parties refused
That's
to blow up the
enemy. Great point.
We got to witness that. We did not witness that,
was Zeus,
that in Man
by the
of
way.
Steel. We did not witness that in Man of Steel. We did not witness that in Avengers. We did not witness that.
What was the body count in Man of Steel?
Oh, God.
Whatever you think it was. Listen, take the body count of Man. Take it from Captain America. I haven't even seen Thor and Iron Man, but I'll go ahead and throw all them.
Iron Man wasn't incredibly violent.
No, Iron Man
Well,
wasn't.
Take them all, and it doesn't even equal a fraction of the body count in Superman. Or Man of Steel.
Oh, well.
So moving on from there, we have a retroactive review where Darren gets to talk about some old comics he read.
Well, okay, and actually this is a nice little segue into this. I hope you guys and our audience don't mind indulging me for a bit, because I have two retroactive reviews for today's podcast, but I'm going to keep my first one brief. Skywolf. Eclipse Publishing last published in 1994 after they lost their entire back catalog dating back to 1977 in a flood. So it's actually kind of hard to find some of their back issues. One of their miniseries, Skywolf, was published a few years before the flood, and it was published to a lot of critical favor. I remember picking up Skywolf 1 of 3 about 25 years ago when rifling through the budget bins at the late off-the-wall comic shop in my hometown. I'm not really sure why I picked it up, but I remember very much liking the story, and search as I might, and keep in mind, back then, we had maybe 4 or 5 comic book shops around there, and if you didn't find it there, you were waiting until one of the conventions came into town, if it did. Other than that, you're kind of screwed. But search as I might, I couldn't find it for the last 2-plus decades. Then, during a particularly boring bureaucratic fest, 5-step process, I randomly type in a search for the 2 remaining issues, as I would randomly do every 2 years or so, and found the set for less than $10 in free shipping. Score. Now, I'm not going to spend too much more time here on this pre-World War II adventure, but it has a lot of heart and a lot of heartbreak, and better than I expected, and was quite well drawn. It was part of a larger franchise called The Aerators, which is something I may search for somewhere down the line to get the full backstory. But honestly, this is just to satisfy the kid completist in me. Now, on to my true retro review, and that's Star Trek. And it's issues 1 through 25 I found for $6 and free shipping online.
Awesome.
And it's DC Comics. Let me ask you guys something. Can you name the six main characters from the Star Trek original series between the two of you?
McCoy, Spock, Kirk,
Uhura, Sulu, Chekhov.
Oh, cool. The fifth one.
Scotty.
Scotty. Now, how many of the actors can you name?
Shatner. Leonard Nimoy.
Forrest DeKelly.
Close enough.
George Takei.
George Takei.
Oh, I know Uhura's name. What was Uhura's name?
I don't know, man. I know Chekhov's name, too. And, Scotty.
Ah, that's as good Scotty. As I can do.
Yeah,
I'm not going to try.
James Doing, Nichelle
yes.
Nichols,
there
Walter Koenig.
Yes.
All right, yeah, so even if you're not Trekkies, and I actually, you know...
In order
to be a card-carrying Trekkie, I don't know what that means. I don't think I'm that. Star Trek is the original multimedia cultural phenomenon. For the purposes of this review, which is to examine comics for our use, I shouldn't dive too deeply into everything Star Trek has influenced, which is to say that Star Trek has now influenced everything that we love and cover during our podcasts. I am reviewing the DC Comics run of Star Trek's comics that began in 1982, which directly succeeds the canon-altering Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, motion picture release. What do you know about Star Trek II?
Khan!
And?
Khan. It's been a long time since I've seen it, to be honest with you.
The death of one.
Who
death
dies?
Of men... Spock.
Spock yeah. dies Spock. In the movie.
Or Kirk in the new
now,
movie.
I remember this movie. I've watched it again. It's really good.
Yeah,
it is an excellent movie.
Yeah, it is.
It's exciting. It's a great movie. It's
Ricardo
a great science
Montalban.
Fiction. Yeah. It's a great science fiction movie. It's a great Star Trek movie. It's probably the best of the Star Trek movies, and that includes the two recent ones. And if you saw the last one, it was very obvious that they were borrowing heavily. It was almost plagiaristic in a way, which is fine.
It was supposed to
which
be.
Is fine. I mean, but all right. So we know, and keep in mind, a little 10-year-old Darren Posick not knowing Spock was dying in this movie. Can you imagine that? Like
it would have been traumatizing.
I was crying. How could you not? And it was a really like you talk about in the annals of cinematic deaths, that one stands out, man, because it is like you saved everyone. And geez, did you? Ooh,
yeah.
I mean, if you haven't seen it, it's must viewing for anyone who likes this kind of stuff. And you may recall that Star Trek enjoyed a renaissance beginning in 1979, thanks in part to the popularity of Star Wars. And Wrath of Khan, which followed 3 years later, was Star Trek's The Empire Strikes Back in terms of its tone and shocking story development. I love Star Trek from this period. I grew up watching the show, and I think this is where our age difference comes into play because, you know, the 3 to 5 years between us now is not a big deal, but 3 to 5 years back then is a chasm.
Yeah.
All right? I didn't have cable growing up. And Star Trek was the only thing on television outside of Saturday morning cartoons and pro wrestling that was remotely appealing to a child. And I would watch the show with my dad every Saturday night at 7 p.m. on Channel 4-3, and my dad would always take me to see the movies when they came out. So I have a great deal of nostalgic joy surrounding these movies and that old show and the movies, which fluctuated in quality, but I love those old movies. Now, here's the thing. Wading into these nostalgic pools, there's an inherent danger because eventually one of the three of us is going to drown a memory, right? Because has anyone tried to watch the Transformers or the Thundercats lately? You can't.
No.
They are unwatchable.
It's Masters of the Universe for me, man.
Yeah.
That's actually okay. I have that. I was the same. There's about 6 or 7 of those episodes that are, you know why? Bruce Timm and Paul Dini worked on that. The Batman animated series had some hands in that. So there's some of those that are actually okay. They're almost unwatchable. You're right. When we do this, we kind of have to tread lightly. And I had not read these before, but I'm like, oh man, I hope I'm not getting myself into something I don't want to get into here.
I've read them. I know you.
But thankfully, this run of Star Trek comics holds it together nicely. The IP for Trek had to have been a big deal for DC because Trek back then was a big deal and had reached enormous levels of popularity thanks to the constant syndicated runs of the show and the growing number of films in the series. Plus, for the very first time, there were real questions about the characters. After Wrath of Khan, how would the crew, specifically Captain Kirk, deal with the emotional death of Mr. Spock and the simultaneous discovery that he had a son? What was Spock's objective when grabbing Dr. McCoy and appearing to mind meld with him, asking him to remember right before Spock dies? The only place to get these answers and the continuing adventures of the Starship Enterprise at this time was in the pages of DC Comics. Because keep in mind, Wrath of Khan comes out, that's supposed to be the last movie. Mm-hmm. They're not supposed to do anymore. So this was it. This was all you were going to get from that point forward. And the Next Generation wasn't on the horizon at that time. So at that point, everyone assumed Star Trek was over. And this is what I like, you know, things that could only happen in comics. So there were some resolutions that needed to happen. Now, there are no resolutions because eventually they do announce that there's going to be another movie, but the subplots are a fixture in these comics. Some of the highlights are this. Several moments where Bones mind meld or transference between he and Spock are hinted at the end of Wrath of Khan, when Bones suddenly knows more about Vulcan physiology. He's like, I didn't know that before. Because, you know, at the end of the movie, they transfer the thing. They transfer, you know, it's like the mind transference, the being transference. He understands Vulcan culture a little bit further. Dr. McCoy is given moments that reveal, but not overdue, that it is he who will resurrect Spock in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. Hence, probably because the writers at the time didn't know there was going to be a Star Trek III. Lieutenant Savick, the other Vulcan officer in the absence of Spock who appeared in Wrath, is further developed, and this is kind of cool. Kirk is very reluctant to accept a new science officer, particularly a Vulcan, and often distrusts Savick. At one point, Bones has to pull Kirk aside and chastise him for his unfair treatment of Savick. It is a poignant moment that reveals how damaged yet resolute Kirk is due to the death of his friend. And this isn't a DC comic from 1982, all right? And this is happening. Not something you might expect to see. Reappearances by some of the original series villains and play a major war in the Cold War that continues between Starfleet and the Klingons. 5 years, this is interesting, 5 years before the development of Star Trek The Next Generation and 6 years before its premiere in 1988, Captain Kirk and crew rescue a Klingon who rejects his race's violent nature and make him a Starfleet officer.
Wow.
However, he's only given minor duties, which is contrary to Star Trek The Next Generation's Worf. By the way, that's my favorite TNG character. And Worf is underrated in the halls of badassery. If you ever watch this, he's a badass. This is also cool.
Of course he is.
Mr. Sulu is made first officer of the Enterprise in the absence of Spock.
Interesting.
This predates any foreshadowing of the films. Sulu will eventually gain his own command, and this DC run fills in an important continuity gap of how he goes from senior officer of the Enterprise to captain of Starfleet's new flagship, the Excelsior. In the comics, Kirk would restore Spock to his first officer and science officer duties, which leaves Sulu the logical next step of promotion to captain. He went from, like, helmsman to captain in the movies, but this fills in that gap, which is kind of cool. Regular writer Mike W. Barr, a name you're probably familiar with, Phil, who had previously written Batman, Detective Comics, Legion of Superheroes, Spider-Man, Green Lantern, Green Arrow.
Barr is a big name.
And Moore has written much Star Trek comics, and this seems to be a labor of love for him. These comics are very well written and serve as wonderful companions to the film series. Barr's most recent work is on JLA and JSA in 2008, and then for the other team when he wrote for Star Wars Clone Wars in 2011. Regular artist Tom Sutton gained fame as the first ever artist on Vampirilla. Most of his work was in Marvel's horror comics. Sutton is very skilled at rendering the likeness of the actors and the interiors of the Enterprise, as well as the varied looks of the alien races. Sutton passed away in 2002 at the age of 65. Now, I've only made it through about half of the 25 issues I've discovered on eBay, and I'm going to keep going. The series ends somewhere between Star Trek V and Star Trek VI, the movies, and then picks up again with Peter David as the head writer. So I see no reason.
My introduction to Peter David was him writing Star Trek.
Was the second run of Star Trek comics, which, and then at that point is the end of the original cast after Star Trek VI. So I actually see no reason to stop. Here's what I need to say, and this kind of ties in our previous conversation. These Star Trek comics are so charming in their ability to depict danger without showing horrific violence. They embody what I would call an 80s adventure comic, because comics are just as violent as the movies. But this embodies that 80s adventure, which I feel is largely absent from titles today. I contend the main reason for this absence is that contemporary artists' skill sets have grown to the point where they can render the minutiae of violence, the blood spatter, the bits of skull as a character's life is extinguished. I'll reference issue 100 of The Walking Dead, in which a central character is needlessly executed for a stunt to stun the titles' audiences as proof that much of the innocence in comics has been lost. This is the chief reason that I have loved this retroactive review above all the other ones I've done. I love Star Trek for its optimistic view of humanity's future. In Star Trek's original timeline, all differences are put aside in favor of one allegiance, that to Earth and Discovery. These comics are a time capsule of something that I have longed to rediscover and return to the innocence of adventure. Live long and prosper.
Huh. Well said.
I have nothing else to say on this. I've said all I could. It's just, it's so
fantastic.
It's so refreshing to see something like this.
It was fantastic. All right, well, every month we do this thing called Wacky Storyline, where we find the most absurd storylines. Two absurd storylines and one fake. And these, then whoever is not giving them has to guess which one's fake. I'm doing the absurdity this month, and I am doing Superman's strangest powers.
All right.
First power, shapeshifting. Lots of aliens can shapeshift. Blah. Lots of aliens can shapeshift, so why not Superman? Once, when threatened by a strange alien, not Kryptonian invasion, Superman was able to use his facial muscles to change his physical appearance in order to infiltrate their ranks. The result was a yellow-skinned, pointy-eared, bald creature. Now, you may ask, how does a hero with nearly impervious skin stretch and contort his face to such a degree?
Precise muscle control.
Because he's Superman.
Oh, yeah, too.
Why does he not use his ability to better disguise himself, his identity? Because he's Superman, damn it. Stop questioning him. The next is Super Hair. During the 60s and early 70s, Superman decided he wanted to officially join the military in order to give his aid to the army in Vietnam. He got through recruitment all right and passed his physical with flying colors, of course. But when he sat down to get his hair cut, no scissors could be found that could tame his mane. After breaking several pairs, the barbers became frustrated. They informed the Man of Steel that he could not officially join the military unless he had the haircut. General Lane, of course, had the solution. He suggested the barbers use a pair of scissors that he had made from kryptonite. With each cut, Superman became weaker until he eventually passed out. General Lane then revealed his end game and moved in to subdue him and take him into custody. Lois Lane bursts in at the last moment with Jimmy Olsen by her side, and the two of them are able to destroy the scissors. Superman came to a few moments later, burst out of the chair where he was no longer getting a haircut, and proceeded to rocket across the sea to where the U.S. Army was fighting in Vietnam. After saving the troops and defeating the enemy, the president awarded Superman an honorary position in the army, much to General Lane's chagrin. The third power is self-duplication. Lois Lane once found herself trapped in an old abandoned Pennsylvania mine shaft with a crusty old prospector. The situation of the entrapment was such that it would require two superpowered individuals to rescue them. Rather than requesting help from his multiple super friends, Superman decided to save them on his own. Through sheer force of will, Superman split himself into two bodies, a red and a blue. And the two of them combined forces to rescue the damsel in distress along with her filthy partner. Much later, this power is explained, much later, as being a result of exposure to red kryptonite. And those are the three powers.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot goes first.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. Oh, like you don't know. Okay. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
No, I just wanted to know
what
rock.
It was. I didn't know that was because you kept doing this.
It was my rock.
Like you're airjacking it.
All right, he just wants to win. Why don't you go ahead and go?
No,
first.
Go for it. No, you're fine. I'm already, I think I'm already winning this game right
what
now.
What is it, like 2-0?
I have two. I have two. You have one?
I have four.
You're full of shit.
All
right.
You're
all right. As the resident Superman expert, I'm going to go with the second one, Super Hair.
Okay. I will go with Super Shape Changing, him changing his face.
All right. The Super Changing ability, the shape shifting, was in Superman number 45 in 1947.
That. Yeah, I knew it wasn't that one.
And the self-duplication was an episode of Adventures of Superman series from 43. The explanation is in John Byrne's run on Superman from the 90s.
For sure. I've seen that.
Mm-hmm.
While it is alluded to that Superman has super hair several times, it is never...
So you made that whole thing up.
I did.
That is awesome.
Thank you.
That is very well done, sir.
Thank you.
Now, I was going to go with that because in Superman 3, they actually show a wrecking ball suspended by a strand of Superman's hair.
Yeah.
But I knew
it is alluded to.
I knew the other two.
You just took it before I could. That was my original go. I hate you. I hate you so much.
I should win the Superman one.
I just want to dominate this game because I've been doing so well.
It's 2-1-1 now, right?
Yeah. I think I'm still up.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that went well. Not for me.
We are going now to a section that we call... Stuck, stick, pick, sayonara.
Stick, stuck, pick, sayonara. Remember,
stick, stuck, builds pick, up, sayonara. You're right.
I'm
going to
throw
right.
full wine bottles at your head until you get this right.
All right. Think of it like climbing up a cliff and then falling off.
All right.
Stick, stuck, pick, sayonara.
Stick, stuck, pick, hasta la vista.
Don't change
All right. The comics I've been reading this month are many. I am sticking... Actually, I have to rearrange these because this is what I'm stuck on.
We may have to make a pact to not say too much about these because we got stacks in front of us.
Well, to be fair, we've skipped this for the last 2 months. Last two episodes.
We just missed one.
Really?
Yeah, well, only one.
Oh, it's because we had a delay. Mm-hmm. That's why.
All right. First that I am sticking with is The Unwritten Apocalypse. Talk about adult comics. This is graphic, it is beautiful, it is extremely violent. But it's such an homage to literature that I love it. Forever Evil, because it's only one more issue. We've got number 6 where we had Alexander Luthor, I've already talked about that. We've got Nightwing strapped to a bomb that could destroy the world. It's connected to his heart, and if they stop his heart, it stops the bomb. So it's a really decent story. It's the first world-bending or, all-universe-combining storyline in the New 52, and it's actually pretty cool. We got Suicide Squad, which I'm sticking with because, it's Suicide Squad. Yeah, thank you. And Matt Kent, who is balls to the wall. He's a good writer. Justice League of America, because it's got a couple issues, and then it becomes Justice League United. Justice League, because it's cool. And that's what I'm sticking with. Now, on to Stuck. We've got Batman. Holy crap! 0 Year, Scott Snyder is amazing. He is the next Frank Miller.
Can I ask you something? When does that end? What issue? Do we know?
It's got, like, 5 more issues.
Did they take an issue off?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they did.
Because I was reading, and it had been a while, and I'm like... What the hell's going on?
Yeah, issue 28 was...
I went back and read, like, the previous issues. Like, was that the end of 0 Year? What the hell?
Yeah, issue 28 was a glimpse into the future of what happens with Batman Eternal. So, and that's where you get to see the Stephanie Brown and stuff. So, yeah. But no, Batman, this is an amazing book. Oh, my God. Batgirl, because Gail Simone, and she's great. We got Batgirl as a vampire, and she's cool. We've got Justice League Dark, Trinity of Sin Pandora, and Trinity of Sin Phantom Stranger, and Constantine, which are all pretty much combined. I mean, they all feed into each other with this awesome, awesome story. Oh, Forever Evil Blight, which was a great story. And finally, I get Constantine that feels like Constantine. I could have cried. This is such a good story. Such a good story. And it shows who Constantine is really out for.
How good was it?
Oh! Thank you.
Thought you needed a release there.
No, this is Constantine, and I love it. It feels like Constantine. I could cry. Okay. And I'm moving on. We've got Harley Quinn, which, yes, I'm starting to really like. They're doing the disgusting and morbid combined with, they're taming down the zany.
Okay.
They're taming down the zany, and I really appreciate that. Because Adam Glass's Harley Quinn took Harley Quinn from Joker's goofy fangirl to the dark, sadistic psychiatrist. This is Harlina Quinzel, who is a psychiatrist, and she, in the Suicide Squad, when Adam Glass got Harley Quinn, it was amazing! She was playing with their minds. She was ruthless. She was degenerate. She was dark. I was scared of Harley Quinn with Adam Glass's run on Suicide Squad. And this Harley Quinn, while she's a little goofier than I like, she's getting better. And I like it. So I'm stuck on Harley Quinn. And Sinestro number one, which was...
Colin Bunn is writing it?
Colin Bunn. It's actually really, really good book.
I like Colin Bunn.
Oh, everybody likes Colin Bunn, dude. It's actually a really, really good book. All right, and I am going to my picks, which...
I thought we were supposed to have one of those, buddy.
I've got two.
Keep it to one.
Keep it to one. Figure it out right now.
Put one of those
in the
stuck pile.
Me too,
Edmund. Figure it out.
All right, I'm stuck on Sandman. I can't believe Neil Gaiman is going to stuck. And out of pick. But no, Neil Gaiman's Sandman is... absolutely fantastic.
It's really, I've heard on the
I've heard really, really good things.
The art is, oh my god. Okay. So, Sandman, Overture. Fantastic. My pick of the month has to be Batman Eternal, for which I have two issues because it's been 2 weeks running. It is an amazing story. And Zack Snyder, James Tynion IV, fortunately, he's not doing too bad. You guys remember how disappointed I was with him from the,
I do.
Yeah. From the...
You know, that's one of those moments I felt so bad for you. Because you were like, oh, this is going to be so great. And you're like, it sucks. Like, I felt really bad for you, Johnny.
But no, he's not... He's so... Yeah. It's been a great story. Batman Eternal has been great. It's Scott Snyder, James Tynion IV, Ray Fox, John Layman, although he's left the titles now. With art by Tim Seeley and Jason Fabok. It's actually been a fantastic story with some stuff that I was not expecting to see. And I'm blown away by the first two issues, and I can't wait for issue number three next.
Awesome.
Out of all three of the the weekly DC comics, this is probably the one I'm going to be buying into most.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
So you're going to give some of these weeklies a try.
I buy every number one DC puts out.
Oh, I see. Right, that makes sense.
And so...
Well, I mean, you actually brought up a very good point. You're just not just a collector, you're an investor as well.
You never know when a number one will pick up.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I have over 1,000 new 52 books since you brought up my investing. They're each worth, individually, $8.47 on an average. On an average, some of them are worth over $100, some of them are worth $2.
Yep.
So, on an average, it's $8.47, which means, I could buy a car if I sold my new 52s. And I'm pretty stoked about that. But Batman Eternal is definitely an investment, and I'm very stoked about what's going on with that. Anyway, moving on to the sayonaras, Aquaman and the others. Alright, that's really my only one sayonara, because I've just got one-shots after that. Aquaman and the others. It's the second Aquaman series. Dan Jurgens is writing it. It's okay. I'm not gonna be investing in this. I dropped Aquaman after I saw that he was just kind of plateauing, and that was...
Because he's Aquaman.
Because he's Aquaman. And so that's where I...
It's too bad. I did a retro review on that a while back, and I always felt he's so underused and poorly written. He shouldn't be the bastard stepchild of comic books.
Jeff Johns did an amazing job with Aquaman in the New 52. And I don't think you'd find any fan that would say that Aquaman is underutilized now in the New 52, especially now that he's got two comic covers going, two comic series running. But the others, it failed to impress. It was cute, but I'm not going to be buying for number two.
I like that. Well put.
And my one-shots, we've got Batman Joker's Daughter, which was nightmarish, and I loved it. Got Superman Lois Lane, which was... And that ends my reviews. Moving on to you.
All That's right. pretty cool. I like...
Yeah.
It's funny how, like, at the beginning when he was talking about all the DC Comics ads, I was like, oh, God. I'm so happy I got rid of all my New 52. But then some of those, I'm like, that actually sounds really cool.
Yeah,
it's hard not to dip out of what I'm reading. But all but, like, two books in my stack are Marvel. So let's get started. My stick pile is not overly long. The first is All New Ultimates, replacing the Avengers in the Ultimate Universe, is Miles Morales, Dagger, Cloak, Spider-Woman, Kitty Pryde, ultimately, Bombshell. I'm just sticking with it. I don't know where it's going. I don't know how I feel yet with the team. Amazing X-Men. It's feeling weird. It's weird having Nightcrawler is back,
yeah.
And Nightcrawler is hanging out. Issue 6 dealt with him interacting with his mother and Mystique, for those of you who don't know, for some reason. He had just brought his father back from hell, and it's really weird. I don't know how I feel about it yet. I also don't know how I feel about Nightcrawler being back, which is why, also, Nightcrawler number 1 is in my stick pile and not beyond. It seems to be dealing more with Nightcrawler soloing with his girlfriend, who is a magician. It's interesting, but once again, that whole continuity thing where he's off doing this, but he's in this world, and he's doing that, and that's always been an issue with X-Men comics, is it's hard to tell where they overlap. So, Nightcrawler. Surprisingly, Sex Criminals is only in my stick. It was bordering the last time we talked, where I thought I might be dropping it. It's starting to pick up steam again, and it's getting a little less gratuitous, because, I mean, it's called Sex Criminals. It's obviously
maybe
not sex,
less gratuitous.
But... well, we're not getting, like, frozen in time semen floating through the air, okay? We're getting more into the storyline as to their relationship and what's going on and her pulling back a little bit and who the sex police are, which is kind of interesting. Same vein as the all-new Ultimates is Ultimate FF. This is the first Fantastic Four comic book I've ever purchased. Because there are only 3 books running in the Ultimate Universe at this point, which is the all-new Ultimate Spot... All New Miles Morales Ultimate Spider-Man, I think is the full title. It's something crazy like that. Ultimate FF and All New Ultimates, which is encompassing the whole universe after Galactus came and did bad things. And something happened. I need to read the end of Cataclysm because I only read the Ultimate Spider-Man Cataclysm stuff. So obviously there's some holes. Somehow Kitty Pryde saved the world. I don't know how, so I need to go back and read it. But Ultimate FF is interesting. It's not the actual Fantastic Four. Like, Falcon, Iron Man, Susan Storm, Machine Man, and Doctor Doom are the Fantastic Four. Notice that there are 5 of them. And Uncanny Avengers, which is just something I've been battling with. Rick Remender is one of those writers that just kind of grows. And it's constantly growing. It's convoluted and crazy as hell.
Oh, my God.
And then you hit,
X-Force
yeah,
was awesome.
And then, well, then you hit an issue, and you're like, bam, your head explodes. That happened with Uncanny Avengers, and now we're in the second arc, and I don't know how I feel about it.
Is Remender like, still on it?
Oh, yeah, Remender's still on it. It's going to be an ultimate reset in the world. And that is my sticks. My stuck pile is significantly larger. Once again, it's been a while since we've spoken. I'm going to go through these as quickly as I can. First is All New X-Factor.
Really? Without Peter David.
What are you talking about without Peter David? Peter David is writing it.
Oh, Peter David is writing it. Okay, good.
The team is really interesting with Polaris, Havoc, Danger, Quicksilver, Gambit, and Warlock.
Really?
I think I like it because it's kind of like the B team, and I don't know where they're going with it
yet. That's always been.
It's really interesting, and I am enjoying it. All New X-Men hit its monumental 25th issue, according to the cover of it. This is
90s.
This is post the Trial of Jean Grey, which overlapped into the Guardians of the Galaxy as well, which was quite interesting. Jean Grey was on trial for being the Phoenix before she was the Phoenix, and because of the lack of tutelage from Xavier, she hit a new level of her power that we've never seen before. So the young Jean Grey has found a way to totally encompass herself in her TK, which has been really interesting to watch. And the thing that's weird is the all-new X-Men, the young team, is now with Scott Summers' team instead of with the Wolverine and the X-Men team. So we're starting to get more and more overlap and more story, but they're breaking up. Scott Summers is going into space.
I heard about that.
Jean Grey is kind of going and doing her own thing. So it's really interesting to see where it's going, which means there's going to be a Scott Summers Cyclops solo book that I'm going to have to at least read part of.
I like how you introduced it as the monumental 25th issue, and I couldn't help but go back to our childhoods where it would be like the monumental 800th issue of Detective Comics.
It's like, holy shit, we hit made it to 25!
Before we got rebooted or the numbering started again, which is actually pretty high number for these days.
It is, which is impressive. My first book that is not a Marvel book. It's an Image book. Black Science by Rick Remender. Oh boy. This book, I picked up the first four issues at the same time because it came highly recommended to me. I was like, I'm tired of reading just Marvel and read something outside. And this book revolves around a team that is jumping through universes to try to find out what's going on in different universes. They feel that they could find the cure for cancer, they could find the cure for AIDS, they could find cures for anything. People could live forever, so they're jumping through time and space. And it's this man and his children and his team. And it's all about human emotion and dealing with your family and dealing with yourself, and it's just been brilliant. Well, it's five Black issues Science. In. It's called Black cool. Science. It's very,
is that
very
Image?
Good.
Yeah.
It is Image.
Image gets to do a lot more than Marvel and DC.
That was fun. It's been fun, and I'm going to keep going, obviously. Guardians of the Galaxy, this is the last part of the Trial of Jean Grey, number 6. I kind of already explained that. Guardians of the Galaxy were coming to try to help Jean Grey and the X-Men because they felt that was the right thing to do.
How's Angela? Is she still in there?
Who, what, and
Angela?
What?
Angela?
Yeah, she's part of the Guardians now.
Okay, good.
Angela's interesting. They're playing her really well now. She's starting to get
a gaming character.
She's actually starting to gain some sort of personality, which she didn't have initially.
Good.
Hawkeye. Yeah, it's Hawkeye, man.
Okay.
Hawkeye did something really messed up, actually, since we last talked. There's two groups working on the book right now, if you're not aware. One team is working on Kate Bishop. The other is Clint Barton. The Clint Barton issues have been getting pushed back, so I've been getting them out of order. Like, the numbers of the issues have been out of order. I got two Kate Bishop issues in a row, and then I got a back issue that was Clint Barton.
You know, I just saw on Flipboard, because I got a text that's breaking news from the comic book world. I really couldn't find what it was.
Uh-huh.
But they said that the next issue of Hawkeye is now shipping. I was like, oh, that's weird that they're saying that. But you're saying they keep getting pushed back.
It keeps getting bounced out of order. So it's been awesome. Kate Bishop's story is, they're finally starting to come together.
Now, if I were, as an uninitiated, Kate Bishop's kind of like, was his sidekick?
She is the Young Avengers Hawkeye.
Okay.
So, not his sidekick, but took on the name Hawkeye when he was not around.
She took up
when he was dead,
Avengers with
when
Alan
he was,
Heisenberg.
In comic book world, they say she took on the mantle.
All right. My second book that is not a Marvel book, and it's from Oni Press, and that is The Letter 44. The Letter 44's basis, since I haven't talked about this book before, is that every time a new president comes into office, the previous president leaves a letter to the new guy. Well, this letter, Letter 44, says, by the way, homie, there are aliens up there, and we know about them, so have fun with that, because we haven't told the people. And, a matter of fact, there's actually a group of scientists up there about to check out what's going on. So, don't tell the world, but be ready for what's coming. So, the whole book is a split between the scientists in space who at the end of... Is this issue, which is issue number 5, started actually having some sort of interaction with whatever it is up there? And we don't know yet, and that's been awesome. It's been really mysterious.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah.
Do you read Robert Heinlein?
No, I don't.
Because that sounds just like one of his
books. And the current president, his advisors are starting to get, like, drugged and, like, knocked out and stuff by the previous president's people. So he just sent the FBI in to get the old president into his office so they can have a little talk. And that was the end of this issue. This has been awesome. The first issue was given to me by John at JC Comics because he was like, you need to read this.
I might have to pick that up myself. It's awesome. That sounds like it comes from an old Russian proverb where the outgoing leader... basically says, all right, when you get, you know, I've left you 2 letters.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard this?
Yes.
So I've left you 2 letters. And he goes, okay, when the first time you get in trouble, open the first one. And the first time the new leader gets in trouble, he opens the first one. And it says, blame everything on the guy that came before you.
Yeah.
And then he goes, and then the next time you get in trouble, open the second one. And the next time he gets in trouble, he opens the second one. And all it says is, sit down and write 2 letters.
Yeah. And I feel like it's like that. But man, it's been a good read. And the beauty of it is there are no superheroes. It's dialogue heavy, which is something we don't get a lot of anymore. And it's just, like, every time I put down a book, I'm just like, that was awesome. And I can't wait for the next month. Letter 44. Stuck on Magneto, which
you mean
I'm...
Magneto.
Magneto, eat my ass.
I don't have magnets on my refrigerator,
I will
Phil.
Give you a magnet in the butt. Yeah, right? Think about that. That's
you
painful.
You win. Magneto.
You know, I was really surprised because Magneto's kind of been tamed down in the last few years because he became like an X-Men. This is kind of him going on his own espionage, violence that you don't like. But in like, it's been so interesting. He's trying to find out who is...
I knew this was going to happen. Yeah. I knew this was going to happen.
What was going to happen?
I did not say I don't like violence.
Now that we come after you? No, I got you. I was just joking. He's trying to figure out, because recently in the all-new X-Men and Uncanny X-Men, Sentinels have been coming after, and there's, like, a secret person. He's trying to figure out who the hell is doing that, and they all feel that it's S.H.I.E.L.D., so he's trying to figure that out.
Now, question. Could I give that to my 5-year-old daughter?
Nope.
Okay.
Well played,
this
sir.
Next book you could, though. Silver Surfer, number 1. This is...
Oh, this looks retro. I love
it. Yeah.
It's
awesome. Open it up. You should see the art inside. Dan Slott.
Dan Slott
is writing it.
Everything,
and honestly, that's the reason I went after it, because
I teach you how to close a Mylar bag.
Because he was doing such a good job with Spider-Man, in my opinion, that I was like, I'll give him another shot. It is such a fun read.
Oh, this is great.
It is, the art is spot on. It fits the tone completely. It's funny, it's serious. And it's a nice look at the Surfer. And I'm excited. Cool. I was not going to bypass the first issue, but man, I'm in. I am in. Stuck on a book that I am nervous is going to get canceled because of its title. The Superior Foes of Spider-Man. This book has been endless, endless fun. Because it's going through the perspective of not even B-class villains, but like the C-class villains. The ones that Spider-Man used to just slap around for funsies. Specifically Boomerang.
And speaking of violence.
The main focus was they were supposed to be stealing the head of Silvermane, which is like a mafia legend that if you had the head of Silvermane, you would rule. And it's been kind of focusing on that. And the nerves is saying that it's coming to an end because it has Superior in the title, which I'll get to shortly. Yeah. Superior Spider-Man team-ups. It's just been fun to read. I like it. This is actually showing an old story between Otto Octavius and Green Goblin, which is very timely with what happens in Superior Spider-Man. I will get to that as well. Uncanny X-Men, same thing, trying to figure out what's going on with those Sentinels chasing them. Wolverine and the X-Men, I'm stuck on again. Going in a new direction, it's no longer Jason Aaron writing it.
Really?
It's Jason Latour. It's going into a Apocalypse storyline with Kid Apocalypse. X-Force. Now on the Stuck list, focusing very heavily on the team, written by Simon Spurrier, who was one of my favorites from last year. This issue focused heavily on Psylocke and her I don't want to kill anymore, and she talks about how it's like an obsession, how it's like a drug to her, and how she talks about how she's been clean for 10 days. And then she was like, I've been clean for 0 days. And there's a very, very bloody page. It's very, very interesting. X-Men.
Not something you want out of sex criminals.
No. No, you don't want really bloody page in sex criminals. It sounds dirty.
Ew.
X-Men. Brian Wood. First time it's hit the stuck page. I'm starting to get interested. The team is getting better, and there's a lot going on. And whoever this baby is that Jubilee picked up, Daddy has shown up finally.
Oh, I need a spoiler.
We'll talk.
Okay.
X-Men Legacy is just... Honestly, I haven't gotten an issue other than issue 300, which came after Simon Spurrier's run. This was a really cool story of a mutant telling about the X-Men to someone who wanted to kill themselves because they were a mutant. Mm-hmm. But his mutant ability was that people, as soon as they took their eyes off him, forgot that he exists. So he talks her down and she walks away and she forgot that he was there.
Interesting.
It was really fun. My pick surprised the hell out of me. Iron Fist, The Living Weapon.
What?
Number one. It, I get the same feeling from this book that I got from Hawkeye when I read number one. It is really dark. It's gritty. The art is awesome. It's following Danny Rand taking over his company. It gives him flashback into his story.
Ooh, that is sexy.
It's just, it's wild. It is absolutely wild. I had such a good time reading it.
Who's the artist?
I picked this up on a whim. And I'm not looking back. Sayonara time, my friends. And my sayonara list exists for a reason. The first is the trio of Marvel Knights books. They're over. Marvel Knights Hulk, Marvel Knights Spider-Man, Marvel Knights X-Men. Out of the three, I would recommend reading Spider-Man, even though the ending was a little lackluster. Hulk was fun. X-Men's art kind of threw me off throughout. I don't know how I felt about it overall by the end. And Superior Carnage. They released an annual. Because I suffered through the miniseries, and I didn't really like it. I was like, why not pick up the annual, because I'm an idiot. Not that great. Better than the actual four-part miniseries, but the reason I'm not reading Carnage versus Deadpool right now is because of this. And my final sayonara, which is something we wanted to talk about anyhow, the Superior Spider-Man. Notice that I got a variant cover for my final issue of Superior Spider-Man.
I applaud that.
I was like, huh, I should probably grab this because it's probably worth something. It was between this actual picture of Octo Spider or Spider-Man in his current fighting Green Goblin and then the real cover. I almost bought both variants, but I stopped myself because I buy too many books. Peter Parker is back. Has been since the last issue. Otto Octavius gave up his mind because he fell in love with a dwarf woman named Marconi. Green Goblin had kidnapped her, said, I'm going to kill her. Octavius was like, I don't know how to save her without, like, risking her dying. The only way I can save her is if I bring Peter back, because he's the only one that could do it. So he goes back into his mind.
That's
and
a
he's
slow
like,
move.
He walks in and he's like, we need to do something. And this is the last issue before this one. And they go through his mind, and they delete Otto's memories from Peter's mind. And Peter watches it happen. And this whole issue is him kind of trying to fix things. Fix things with MJ, with Aunt May, with Jay, with J. Jonah, with Carly. And make it clear, but like Harley and MJ at this point kind of had a feeling something was up, and they did the full circle, and the whole end of it was, he said that Spider-Man's mantra forever has been, as long as I'm around, no one will die. And his realization was that Otto Octavius, who had just found his humanity through Marconi, had to die for him to be back. And that's how it all tied together at the end. And I don't know where they're going with Amazing Spider-Man. And I don't think Peter Parker has all of his memories. They have not made that clear at this point. But man, Superior Spider-Man, 31 issues of fun. Seriously, it was a great run. And Dan Slott just surprised the hell out of me with it. I was expecting it to be terrible. Remember when I was like, oh god, Otto is going to be Spidey.
You know, I always like when you talk about Spider-Man because you actually hold back tears sometimes.
It's... Man, I've read so much of it. I'm getting there with X-Men.
You know, when you go through the Superior Spider-Man with Otto Octavius taking over as Spider-Man, there's no way you could pitch this story to someone to make it seem plausible or believable or not silly. But somehow Slott made it work. And it appears that way.
And that's the thing.
I've not read it, but
no, it's good. I mean, it's 31 issues. It's worth the read. It's funny because when it happened initially, Dan Slott was getting like death threats and things because it happened, and people threatened him and blocked. He had to block them on Twitter and whatnot. He actually started. People started having their friends ask him to unblock him because they loved what he did with it. And there are people now begging for Otto to stick around.
You know, it's so funny when you get to that stuff where I always wonder, okay, so I'm going to tie this together with my retro review with the new Star Trek movies where people, like, they've been enjoyable movies. They've been fun movies. They've not been old Star Trek.
No.
And people are like, how dare you? This is terrible. You should bring it back. I'm like, guys, you've got like 700 episodes of Star Trek, literally, and 8 movies. And like, and how many issues of Spider-Man?
Well,
you want old school Spider-Man? You know there's comics out there that you have not read.
And that was the thing, too. What Dan Slott's argument was just Amazing Spider-Man alone. If you want to read a Peter Parker Spider-Man story, there are over 700 issues.
Yeah.
And Amazing Spider-Man alone. Not to mention Peter Parker Spider-Man, Web of Spider-Man, Spectacular Spider-Man.
They'll end up being 31 issues in the grand scheme of things of this.
Of
and what's wrong with that?
Brilliant storytelling, because this final storytelling was Green Goblin. Who are Spider-Man's two biggest enemies?
Green Goblin
and Otto Octavius. Who ended up having to face off at one point. To the point that Otto realized that he really was not Peter Parker's greatest enemy. That Green Goblin was. That Norman Osborn was.
I'm glad we didn't say Venom.
Yeah,
everyone else would say Venom.
No, Venom is nowhere close to his greatest enemy. Carnage is more of a villain than
Venom. I like
Venom.
How we almost said those in unison.
But the whole standoff at the end of... There's a moment where Peter Parker, Spider-Man, is swinging up to fight Green Goblin. And he says something about, you can't save the girl. He was like, well, that's better than carrying a man purse all these years. And it zooms in on Green Goblin's face, and it's like, oh no, you're back. Because he knew that Otto was Peter. In that moment, I was just like, yes! And it was so, so good, and I'm so excited that Amazing Spider-Man.
You know what, I may have to reach out to you. I need some good Spider-Man. I think I need some old-school, good, great Spider-Man.
There is a lot to read,
and
then
you're the guy to go to.
Yeah, I'd have to dig. But yeah, there's definitely a lot there. But that is my stuck pick. Sign art, and I'm sad to see Superior Spider-Man go, but Amazing Spider-Man is back in a couple of weeks. I'm ready for it.
I am sticking with Skyward. Don't know much for how much longer that I'm going to stick with it. It sort of kind of hit a wall. I was hoping for a great fantasy adventure, return of the old Skyle adventures. You know, as you can see, I've been kind of searching for that adventure comic, and I don't think this is it. Samurai Jack. Welcome to the party.
Wow.
I gave it a shot because I was a big fan of the show.
I loved the show.
Everybody loved the show.
Yeah. It's not bad. I think I missed issue 2. We're about 5 or 6 issues in. It's exactly like the show.
Is it really?
It really is exactly like the show.
Check that out.
Plus
it's IDW.
It is IDW, and they're doing some great stuff. Yeah. Sticking with Masters of the Universe number 9. I gotta be honest, I don't even really remember what went on in this thing. This was actually good. It's almost made it to stuck, but on the overall grand scheme of things, they sort of ended up in this like different realm, and they had to fight their way out because they're searching for Teela. And it's still starting to feel like a little bit like it's on the cusp of something, but it just still hasn't gotten there yet.
It's like,
come on.
It's not out.
Like, this is that book to me. And I am the guy, if they ever want to put this book in the top 10, I'm the guy to do it. but this is it can go either way. It could be on the Sayonara pile real fast, or it could be my pick of the month real fast. I just don't know what to do with this thing. Masters of the Universe versus the DC Universe is in the stick pile. Better than it has any business being.
Really?
But... they're kind of making Skeletor out to be kind of a wuss. And
who's he fighting?
He's not fighting anyone yet.
Oh, okay.
They sort of like he's mind controlling people.
I bought the first
basically,
issue.
It's all right. He takes control of Superman at one point.
That's bad.
We're hoping, and you would assume the reason he takes control of Superman is because we're going to see He-Man and Superman fight.
Yeah.
Which they've already done like 30 years ago. All right. Sticking with Superman Unchained.
I've been looking at that, and it's been...
It's on life support at this point. And with John Romita Jr. and is it Geoff Johns taking over?
If this is not
next one of next month's Sayonara, I'll be shocked.
They're taking over Action Comics. They're not taking over Unchained. Unchained is canceled.
Okay. Oh, Unchained's done?
Yeah.
Well,
no, actually, 8 and 9 have been postponed.
Okay, well, I'll probably drop it. Yeah. We'll see you next month. Stuck on Batman 66.
Of course.
When I talk about the minutiae of violence, and I go to this, it's a perfect juxtaposition. They're just fun, and they're stupid and silly. But if you read some of these, you start seeing bam, biff, pow, and it just feels so right. Stuck on Batman, the new 52's version, what is it called again? Zero Year.
Yeah,
it's been really good storytelling. It's been a nice little lens to view Bruce Wayne through. I wasn't sure what's going on here. That was just a look forward forever. Stuck on the Saviors. Speaking of alien invasion, it's a black and white comic from Image, where I'm assuming a small New Mexico town.
Ooh,
a guy,
sexy.
Yeah, a guy discovers very much in the Bruce Timm Paul Dini sort of artwork. Where he discovers there's aliens in his small town. He's kind of a stoner. Should be a lot of fun. Kind of a cross between some of those old John Hughes movies and like maybe old 80s Steven Spielberg. East of West, stuck on that. This thing is just... I can't say...
I want to read it so bad.
I'm totally in love with it. And now this is where... this is an extraordinarily violent comic.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of knew that going in. And it's not... And this isn't something we've... This is not Captain America or Superman or Batman. This is something completely different. I still don't know where it's going, but I'm still along for the ride at this moment. Stuck on the Massive. This thing's been a lot... Very, very interesting about the post-apocalyptic crash and, how people are surviving. It's the first post-apocalyptic crash in the last 10 years that does not have zombies.
Nice.
I've enjoyed some Stuck on the Massive, Stuck on Star Wars. Obviously, we are in the twilight, unfortunately, of this Dark Horse run of Star Wars comics because, as we know, Marvel takes control of the Star Wars license soon, which is a loss. Because Dark Horse has done wonders with this license, and they don't deserve to lose it.
Keep your hopes up. It could still be good.
Well, I'm saying, yeah, but, this is switching in the middle of something that doesn't need to change.
Yeah.
Obviously, you knew this was coming. But this is bridging the gap between The Empire Strikes Back and A New Hope. And it's been really fun. It got off to a real slow start. But there are some really cool things. These issues dealt with a low-level Imperial officer who is assigned to Darth Vader's duty and how she deals with him, knowing that Darth Vader has a penchant for punishing you by killing you if you don't do so hot. Good stuff. Stuck on the Wake. This is the second half of a 10-issue miniseries. The first half was how the crash happens. Now this is what comes next, where these aquatic creatures who have apparently existed for centuries decide, you know what? We want our world back.
That's H.P. Lovecraft.
Very much so.
Yeah.
That's very good. Yes, well done. This is exactly what it is. And this is the first issue 6. This is the first of the next chapter, where all the characters from the first one, gone, because this is several hundred years in the future. The Star Wars. Stuck on the Star Wars. As I mentioned before, this is... I don't even know if I got much of a look at this, but I think this is just a sketchbook.
This is the original Lucas...
Yeah, this is some of the sketches where they took some of the original designs from Ralph McQuarrie, and they put it together. This is the original thing they showed George Lucas to say, hey, we want to do the original script of your Star Wars, and he gave it the green light. Man, oh man, this has been very interesting. The artwork in this has been great. It's so cool because you're seeing all these conceptual designs that you know we saw back then of when, and then it didn't look like they did in the, they ended up looking differently in the Star Wars movies, but in here they look exactly like what they're supposed to do. You see the Star Destroyers here, they're actually one man fighter ships. My pick of the month is very timely. Serenity.
Nice.
I'll be damned if this didn't feel exactly like, exactly like the picking up from where the movie left off. The dialogue, it's written by Zach Whedon. Unfortunately, now we know where all the S.H.I.E.L.D. was supposed to go, and all the time and devotion to S.H.I.E.L.D.'s kind of gone into this comic. And I got to tell you, I love it. And the artwork is great. This thing is wonderful. This is one of the few comics that I'm getting excited about, because I got to tell you, everything in this pile I can get rid of.
Leaves on the Wind.
Very, very good. I got two Sayonaras. Number one is Battlestar Galactica. Not that it got overly bad. I was done with it. And my other Sayonara is The Shadow.
On the edge for a while.
It's another one of those things I'm done with. It never got really great. It was never terrible. But one of the problems I have with this, it seems like it's a new team every couple of months trying to do their own thing. And
that's kind of Dynamite's thing, though, isn't it?
It sort of is. And I'm really sad that I'm never going to get the conclusion to The Last Phantom, because when we first started this podcast, that was always my pick of the month. It was so good. And they just cut it. And I'm worried that since this has always been on the edge, I'm like, you know what? It's time to cut the cord with this thing. It's not going to get great. It's not going to get bad. I'm just going to let it go. So that's all I got, folks. But if you guys got... When Leaves on the Wind for Serenity is finished, I got to send it your way, especially if they're going to make more. Yeah. I mean, this is fantastic. Definitely.
I need to
put me down
the
there too.
And stuff.
It'll be time for that.
Yeah,
every
done that
few
in
months.
A while.
Well, guys, that about wraps it up for us here at Podcasters. Anything to plug, you guys?
Not really, but we're the Panel Scanners, not the Podcasters.
We are the Panel Scanners. I have something to plug. I am teaching a course in comic book history called the Academy of Comic Knowledge. At the Nervous Dog Cafe in Stowe, starting on May 1st, and running for 6 Thursdays. The cost is $30 if you'd like to show up and learn about comic book history. It'll be fun. We've got an open forum. We've got lots of information to cover. So that's what I'm doing. That's what I'm plugging. It's $30 to attend, and that's it. And I'm the Panel Scanners. Thank you, Phil.
Yep.
I'm Johnny Caps.
Phil.
Darren.
See you on the other side.